time to feel the rush of the round table. Brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Are you really an independent contractor? Find out in seconds for free at PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.
Ryan Doyle and Reg Minaire here with you on The Rush this afternoon. Jay Michaels is off for the next couple of weeks. We welcome in Robert Benzie, Queen's Park Bureau Chief at the Toronto Star. Hello, sir.
Hey, Ryan. Hey, Reshmi.
Hi.
And Bill Carroll is here, host of The Bill Carroll Show, Fridays at noon on this very radio station. Also the host of The Morning Rush at CFRA in Ottawa, where, of course, they have been in level two for quite some time. Nice to have you.
And according to John Tory, mayhem on the patios. Mayhem.
Mayhem.
People ignoring the rules, getting together, pulling tables together. It's chaos here.
I love it when he pulls the... Well, I know a lot more now than I used to when I was a dumb talk show host like you, buddy.
That's what I heard.
Yeah, that's what I heard, too.
Was my interpretation.
You're right. All right, let's start off with the big announcement today from the Premier. Toronto and Peel will join many other regions in being able to shop in malls, hit up a patio, get a haircut. Robert, I guess maybe the biggest surprise is the fact it's going to be happening on Wednesday at midnight. I think a lot of people saw this coming maybe a little later on down the road.
Yeah, I mean, initially the government had said that they wanted to make announcements on a Monday and have it have the new openings come on Friday. But I think they understood that the situation is such in Toronto and Peel that they don't need to do that, it was pointless to wait. Businesses have had a long time to get ready for this. Remember, Halton, Durham, and York have been in the level two since last Friday. So we've really known for almost 2 weeks that this was going to be happening in Toronto. So I think giving these businesses a few extra days of business in the summer when the weather is good is a smart thing. And as the mayor was just telling you guys, Toronto is ready for this. The businesses are ready, and certainly the people are ready.
Bill, you've had this experience for quite some time, or at least for a few weeks. You've had a bit of a head start. I kind of retold the story you were telling us last week, where it's not, like, careful what you wish for. It's not like it used to be when it comes to going out and having a drink or a bite to eat on a patio.
Yeah, we went to one of our favorite restaurants. They only have a tiny little patio, so they've expanded now into the parking lot and around the corner, and you're eating next to the garbage dumpster. It's just fantastic. And, like, the atmosphere is terrible. You got these temporary tents up, and there are all these makeshift poles and some fencing that's half put together. And it's not – you're there because you're tired of cooking and cleaning up, but also you want to support local business restaurants we've been to many times, and you know the people, and you know they're struggling. And it's not fantastic, though, but it's better than nothing. But here's the reality. You either do this in Toronto, or those parties on Cherry Beach are just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. It's better actually to open up now and do it, let people go out and have a good time in a more controlled way. And I think that's ultimately what's pushing this along, because really the numbers are not much different than they were last Monday when they could have made the call for Friday. So not a whole lot has changed. I think they're just sensing that people are fatigued and they're going to do what they're going to do now. And so you might as well try to control it. I will also tell you, being a couple of weeks ahead of you, you can't. It really is. It's mayhem here. It's crossing the street. I see a woman from my doctor's office, a physician, you know, in the middle of COVID-19, hugging and kissing everybody. Oh, how's it been? You haven't seen it so long. It's crazy. You say stage two means we're opening up carefully, and people hear, it's gone. We're free. There's no more COVID-19. That's the reality. And that's how it's going to be until we get scared again and the numbers come back.
Really? I mean, Bill, are you seeing an overflow of people coming out and spending money in businesses?
No, the businesses are all being pretty good, but people are just, you know, their kids are out now, and they're having other kids over to the house, and everybody's hugging and kissing, and the parks are full, and people aren't maintaining their distance. That's just the reality. So you're actually better off, you know, like, I didn't actually see it. We were in two different patios this weekend. I didn't see anyone pull tables together, but I eat with the blue-haired crowd now because of this shift that I'm on, the early morning shift. So I don't think it's quite as bad as the mayor may have made it sound. But at the same time, outside of those controlled areas, people have gone back to their normal lives. They just have. You hear one new case in Ottawa for the second straight day. No deaths here in 6 days. People feel like it's safe to go out, and that's what they're doing.
Let's move on to the family of a 62-year-old man who was shot and killed by police in Malton over the weekend. There continues to be protests in the area in which he lived. This family is now demanding a public inquiry. Robert, we've got a Newstalk 1010 exclusive poll out today saying that 60% of Canadians don't feel that their local police detachment are properly trained when it comes to dealing with those that suffer from mental illness. I think the time for change is past us. I mean, we need to continue to hammer this home, and waiting for a report that's 2-3 years in the making, it's not going to cut it. Change needs to come now when it comes to this type of training.
Yeah, I mean, this is a familiar story, unfortunately, and I'm surprised it was only 60%. I'm surprised it wasn't higher. I mean, Mr. Chowdhury's death is something we've seen in Toronto numerous times over the years, whether it was Andrew Locu or even Sammy Yateem on the streetcar when James Forcillo shot him dead. He was in distress at that time. And you have these situations where our officers trained for this. I'm not sure that they are. They seem to draw their weapons far too often in cases where weapons aren't necessarily needed. And I think this is a really troubling case. A 62-year-old father of four obviously had some mental health issues that he was struggling with. But you know, it was supposedly a wellness check, and he ended up dead. I mean, I think there's a lot of people who are concerned about the police and what's happening in our society. And unfortunately, it's not a new thing. This has been going on for many, many years.
Bill, I was saying earlier, it's not necessarily an anti-cop thing. To the contrary, the individual officers are only good as the training they receive from management and the higher-ups, and that's where this has to start. I mean, you have to go back to the people who are setting out the guidelines. If their officers aren't prepared for this type of stuff, something needs to change there.
Okay, but then if you send in mental health professionals, people who know better than anyone else how to deal with the situation, and you're dealing with mental illness, and it can turn violent very quickly. And I heard someone say he wasn't a danger to anyone. Well, once the police are in, you have to ask yourself, was he now danger to the police? Because they're allowed to defend themselves. I wasn't in the room. I don't know the answer to that, and I don't want to talk about this specific case. But in general, you can send a psychiatric expert into the room. But when it turns violent, then you need an expert in controlling violence, and that's a police officer. So I just don't think there are any easy answers here, right? It turns ugly. The mental health professionals would end up calling the police anyway, and sometimes people are going to get hurt. And it's awful, and it's tragic. And of course, in a democratic society, we need a thorough investigation into each and every one of them, and we got to make sure nothing criminal happened, and there aren't systems we can improve. So I think we need to do that, and we are doing that.
And turning ugly is, you know, that's where it's like, is that a spectrum? Do people get to decide when something turns ugly? Did the police see something that we didn't see? But I mean, it's about de-escalation too, right? It's about having a moment of pause, even in an emergency, to address the situation, to at least understand it before addressing it.
You know, I was having a conversation with the chief of police. I think it might have been Durham Region. I don't remember. There's a chance, Ryan, you were in the room at the time. We were having similar conversations because this is 20 years ago. We've been having these conversations for a long time. And he flew across the desk and put a pen up against my throat. In an instant, he said, "How much time did you have to think about de-escalating this situation?" That's what we're dealing with. It was a pretty scary demonstration.
Yeah, and effective. I mean, again, this is why I think it comes down to the management and the training of these officers. Give them as many tools as you possibly can to try, at the very least.
I think the answer is going to be, and it's going to be expensive, but you're going to have to send in mental health professionals with police there as backup. So they're not the front line because they're just not trained to do this. It takes years of experience to be able to deal with it. And maybe it's time we paid for it. Maybe that's where some of this idea of funding the police, defunding the police comes in, where a little less money to policing and a little more money to those other frontline workers who can work in tandem with them.
This is an interesting story. It has to do with work refusal. It kind of seems like a weird statement or a weird phrase in a world where people have been hoping to get back to work and off the government rolls. But, Robert, this is interesting because they found that a lot of Canadians are facing this challenge of going back to work after being told for months that going back to work can be dangerous. And a number of them are saying, no, I don't want any part of it.
And I don't blame people for feeling that way, Ryan. I mean, look, I'm personally fed up with working from home. Although I am fortunate enough that I do go into the Queen's Park Bureau of the Star a couple times a week because it's a safe location and the office is never closed. But But, you know, I have other friends and colleagues who work in office towers and so on, and they can't go to their offices, and they're not sure they want to go to their offices, because do you want to get on an elevator that's packed with people, or spend an hour waiting for an elevator that it isn't packed so you can get to your office? I mean, there's a lot of trepidation, and I understand it, and I don't blame folks for not wanting to get on the streetcar or the subway, even if people are wearing masks and gloves and keeping, you know, safe social distance. I think it's understandable. I mean, we've been in this now, you guys, for 100 days, basically, a state of emergency since March 17th. So there's going to be some PTSD from this, and I think this is part of that.
Yeah, Bill, you look at it and you think you could name the dangerous jobs of yesteryear, you know, construction sites and that kind of thing. And now it could just be as simple as not wanting to go into that office building and, as Rob said, wait for the elevator.
Yeah, it really depends on the job, right? When some of the studies show that if you're working in a call center and everybody's talking all day long, and if the ventilation isn't great, it can really spread. Another study showed that there's not a whole lot of spread in an elevator because you're not in there for very long. But, you know, our office buildings weren't built for this, right? They don't necessarily have the kind of ventilation they need. Here in Ottawa, we've got these awful old 60s and 70s office towers, and I would not want to work in them right now. I wouldn't want to do that. On the other hand, I would probably feel pretty okay waiting on tables, especially on a patio, with a half-empty patio. So every situation is different. We do have to figure out a way, though, to sort out the ones who say, I'm too scared to go to work, because that's legitimate from the ones, and I've heard them. I've got friends saying, my kids are saying, hey, I'm making more money on CERB than I ever did in any summer. I'm not going to work. I've been called in. I don't want to do it. Other business owners are telling me, they say, don't get me up over $1,000, though, because I don't want to lose my qualification for CERB. So some people are just taking advantage of the moment in this situation as well. How do you sort them out, though? Because this is not a time to tell people we're cutting you off when government won't let you work. So it's a tough balance. Glad it's not my job.
Okay, there is a population who has to work, though. I just want to give them a shout out right now. They don't have the luxury of saying, I don't want to go to work. They are working.
No choice. No choice.
Exactly.
Robert Benzie, Bill Carroll, who's from Ottawa, the city where affection is happening in the streets.
Mayhem. Like that. Mayhem.
Thank you both. We appreciate it.
We'll be right back with more of this encore presentation of The Rush with Ryan and Jay. News Talk 1010.